Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sorry. Apologies. Piss off.
Marcus!
It's the football ramble. Like Cleopatra coming at you. James or Jim's here.
Hi.
Pete's here.
Don't shout in your microphone, thank you.
Sorry.
Hi.
And Lukey Moore is here.
All right.
Gentlemen, who is your... And this is inspired by an email from Tim in Virginia. Who is your favourite moustached player of all time?
I'm going to jump straight in and I'm going to say Souness, because that's a hard moustache. That is a real hard bastard's moustache. You can look very strange with that little sort of permy bit on the top of your lip like he had, but it just made him look even scarier for some reason.
Well done. Possibly the
And well
point.
Done to you.
That's, and Tim.
Well done to Tim.
Well done to Souness's face.
The points could be going your way, but Pete or Luke, who have you guys got?
I'm kind of between Aldridge and Rush, because they were kind of the same fellas. Because Aldridge lost his moustache.
They really were, actually.
Yeah, it's very true.
But Aldridge lost his moustache a little while in, but Rush
didn't lose
just
it
kept
off,
going.
Presumably shaved it off.
Well, presumably, yeah, but we don't know,
that
do
is
we?
A presumption.
God giveth, God taketh.
I'll tell you what I'm going for. I'll just give you a clue. He hasn't got his straps, Ray.
Oh, Mark Lawrenson.
No. Brian Kilcott? No, yeah, Mark Lawrenson.
Very good.
Mark Lawrenson, because, I can't think of anyone else. So. Don't look at me like that.
He's got notable hair and a notable moustache, I think.
Did he shave his tash off because Bolton stayed up?
Yeah, something stupid.
It wasn't yeah, that's right.
Something insipid.
Insipid. Well,
That's that one done. Who gets the points?
James did.
Yes!
Oh, what?
I've never won it. Lots of insipid things were going on in the Champions League between Chelsea and Barcelona.
Inspired link.
Thank you very much. Were Chelsea incredibly hard done by, gents?
I think they were a little bit hard done by, but I think the way they behaved negated that.
Yeah.
We've had loads of emails about this.
Yeah, this has been a real, real sort of...
It's been a talking point, James,
hasn't it? But looking back at the first leg as well, I mean, Barcelona were undeniably denied a penalty.
Yeah.
But over the course of two games, there's so many different things happen that it's hard to sort of find that balance. I mean, two of those penalty claims seem legitimate, really. I think John Terry saying, oh, the referee missed six or seven claims. He's just made some of those up. The reaction was just disgraceful. I know Chelsea have been sort of pilloried all over the place, but some of those players really need to have a look at themselves.
Well, I think that one for me, I'm going to disagree slightly. One of the penalties was definitely for me, the Piqué handball. Like the first one against Malouda.
Piqué pretty much admitted it after the game.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you handballed
it. He was banged to the right side, wasn't he?
You know, the Malouda Dani Alves one for me was questionable. I could see why the referee made the decision he made. The Drogba one. Drogba knows that he makes a run for his own back by diving around a level play. Yeah. So he's not going to get all of those all the time because that's the way he is. And I forget, what was the other one? I can't remember.
It was a Balak in the last 9 seconds.
I don't think that was a massive...
That's Eto'o, though, wasn't it? Was it his armpit area?
I mean, he smashed it right from point blank.
The PK one was a definite
handball. Well, I mean, Balak was lucky to even be on the pitch, considering... Did he rake someone's eyes in the first leg?
He put a massive reducer in on Iniesta as well.
Well, there was talk... people were saying Balak could have been sent off in the first leg, but I thought the worst decision of the second leg at Stamford Bridge was the sending off of Abidal.
Yeah. That was a poor decision. Yeah.
And a lot of people forgot about that when they were moaning about the penalties. I thought, well, actually, you're playing 10 men. I mean, really, Chelsea lost that game because they missed the chances.
Because they will not learn.
Well, just if you're going to just score one home goal and expect to just park the bus in front of the goal, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then just expect... What do you expect?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're openly inviting attacks by playing that way, which is what you're doing
from Barcelona,
then you know if you do concede a goal, then you can't complain. I know, obviously, the complaints are that they should have had chances to put the game to bed with the penalties and that, but I think their game plan was such that. They were just mugged, basically. It was smash and grab right at the end.
I can't remember if we talked about it on the last show after the first leg, but I remember thinking or saying to one of you boys ever on the show or not, I can't remember, that if you defend that way in the first leg and don't even try and attempt to get an away goal, you know, don't be surprised if you get your pocket picked in the second.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
They've had some decisions go against them, but so have Barcelona in the first leg, and they were descending off of Abidal.
Yeah.
And the referee had a poor game, there's no doubt about that. But I think the reaction was an overreaction. I think that the way Drogba and Balak in particular behaved was absolutely deplorable. And I think, you know, that they should have the book thrown at them for that.
So. Absolutely. But I mean, this is an overreaction, but there was talk on an article on the Guardian website about Chelsea actually being banned from Europe next season over it, which is really...
That was Richard Williams in the Guardian, wasn't it?
Over the top. But I do think there needs to be some sort of sanctions there, because this whole campaign about respect for the referees, that's just... It's just not even taken off, is it?
Apparently the referee, he was understood to have been smuggled out the country by police. but I don't think... You see, a lot of people saying, why was this referee put on such a high-profile game? Considering Chelsea-Barcelona has had problems in the past, Andras Frisk, pretty much finished refereeing after that when Mourinho, when he was in charge of Chelsea, was saying
he's always English, all English. Ersmeyer, as well.
But the Sun published his fucking phone number.
Yeah. Right, but in Euro 2008, the Italian FA demanded an apology from UEFA after Tom Henning.
Over Abo.
Thank you. He incorrectly ruled out a goal by Luca Toni, and he apologised, and he's been taken off international tournament matches.
Right.
So why is he given a semi-final of such prestige?
I think that's fine. I wasn't aware of that, actually. But I don't think he's a poor... But I think what they tried to make out, I mean, Jamie Redknapp in particular, I mean, it's one of the... Obviously, poor Jamie. He was beside himself, wasn't he? It's the only emotion I've ever seen him at, that his cousin Frank didn't get to a Champions League final. Mm. I mean... It's like he's living his football career vicariously through
Arsenal Spurs. He always gets a bit upset about.
Yeah. But he was saying that the reason it was a poor performance by the referee, which it was, but he was saying it was a poor performance because he's from Norway. I mean, just because you get plenty of good footballers from all over the place.
Well, of course you do.
You get referees from different countries as well. George Weah's from Liberia. He's still a pretty good footballer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that's a very silly point. And Roy Hodgson, good old Roy the Boy, has come out and said that he's obviously condemned the death threats made to the Norwegian referee. But Hodgson, who has worked in Sweden, Switzerland, Italy, Denmark.
You mean Roy Hodgson?
Roy Hodgson and Finland during his very vast managerial career. He's defending the rights of the smaller countries to, as one should.
He's a champion of the people of Europe.
Exactly,
he's
James.
He's a citizen of Europe.
And, he is.
as are we all. And he said, Roy said, do you want to go down the Jamie Redknapp route? Only England, Italy and Spain count. Everywhere else is no good. There's 60 countries in Europe. Do we say to the other 57, sorry, pal, you're not Premier League. Yeah. Norway is good enough. The average crowd in Norway is 15,000, and that is in a country of 4 million people. The average attendance for a football match in this country is 25,000, and that's of a country of 60 million people.
Yeah.
He said, so what are we going to do in the future? Just because the Premier League has Sky Sports behind them and has got loads of money, do we forget about the rest? You know, do we say to France, Poland, Russia, Austria and Slovenia, you don't count, it's all nonsense?
Of course not.
Good on him for saying
that. Well, we like Roy.
We do.
Man. But the fact that Jamie Redknapp said that is, you know, imagine saying that about an African referee. Oh, yeah, he's rubbish because he's from Mali or whatever. You wouldn't get away with saying that. It's nothing to do with where he's from. He had a poor game. You know, he didn't have a poor game on purpose, and he certainly wasn't a sort of big player in some sort of corruption thing against Chelsea.
It's just a sort of an indication of the boys' club that does exist at Sky, that he's incapable of being level-headed and objective, when the point of being a pundit is to be level-headed and objective.
Absolutely. Well, when I first saw it, I was actually thinking to myself, he's in danger of breaching the broadcasting
code,
saying that.
Absolutely.
Lovejoy overstepped the mark on more than one occasion on the 606.
But Graham soon has hinted, he said, well, I know we've got to be careful, but he said UEFA will be very happy, an English club is not, you know, there's not two English clubs
soon
in the final.
Soon said that as well.
Yeah, he did. I was like, what? Hang on, Graham. Do you know?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you're saying Soon said that. Sorry. Yeah, I remember that as well.
You know, there's one more point I've got to make. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, you look at Redknapp after the game and you think, and then you come to the 606 and you listen to Lovejoy. Two ridiculously biased broadcasters. One because his cousin plays for Chelsea. One, another because he's a massive openly Chelsea fan. Is that the state of the sports broadcasting media in this country?
No, it's not, because the Ramble are here.
Well,
yeah,
that's what we're all
here. We are.
You know, this is a reaction. This is like punk to prog.
I mean, you only have to look at what Pete thinks about Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I think that, you know, someone from another country was here on holiday and they watched the Sky Sports coverage and they flicked over and listened to the 606. You've got to have some sort of, you know, unbiased sort of voice on it. You can't just go onto it. And by the way, if Lovejoy's such a big fan of Chelsea, what the fuck is he doing the show anyway? Yeah. He should be at the ground. Yeah, they rotate the show. There's no reason for him to be there.
It's literally unbelievable, Luke. I mean, what sort of referee can manage a game when he only talks foreign?
Exactly.
Something I would like to point out, I'd like to give John Terry a lot of praise, actually. And you're probably looking at me, why? But in amongst all this Champions League madness, he went into the Barcelona changing room after the game and shook hands with all the Barca players and wished them all the best for the final. Pep Guardiola couldn't believe. He said it was absolutely superb. And Xavi said, I can quote him, he said, "I will always remember John Terry coming into our changing room and congratulating us all one by one. It was great to see that professionals like this are about."
You shouldn't even do that anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but hang on a minute. After a big game like that, when emotions are running seriously high, for him to do that, I think that's really good.
But wasn't
actually
he haranguing the referee with Drogba at one point?
And he was Drogba back, wasn't he?
But I think that was after Drogba and him went after the referee anyway. Yeah. And I think he got involved in dragging Drogba back.
I think John Terry. Well, I don't think everybody does do it, because if Xavi,
I'm not saying everyone does do it.
Well, I think John Terry deserves a bit of credit there, and it's nice to see the England captain is leading by example.
Give him credit. Credit for doing what he should be doing anyway as a club captain. And whether people do it or not anymore, it's regardless. He should.
Well, obviously, but it's you know, for some of the, you know, Pep Guardiola and Xavi to come out and go, that's absolutely amazing, great attitude and so on.
He did do a piss in the corner though. At one point.
Well, you know, that was one all.
fair play.
It does set up an interesting final though. The result. I mean,
it's the best final.
I do think it's the two best teams in the world. It's, you know, you can argue legitimately.
It's a shame that some players are going to miss out. Alves and Abidal.
Fletcher as well.
It's weird because Alves is probably deservedly, but Abidal and Fletcher are going to miss out probably undeservedly.
Yeah. Well, I thought when Barca were going to appeal for Alves and Abidal, I thought that's ruined Fletcher's chances, if he had any chance.
They never turned him over anyway, did they?
No.
But Alves should look
at doing it. I mean, their excuse for Fletcher's not getting turned over was that Man United didn't appeal in time.
Yeah, but they can't set a precedent. They can only do it in terms of mistaken identity. They've got to back the ref.
They only do it if the ref says, I've made a mistake, or it's mistaken identity.
Last Scotsman to play a Champions League final?
It's Paul Lambert.
Oh, fuck. It's Paul Lambert.
Paul Lombard direct.
The semi-final between Arsenal and Man United was humbling.
Yeah.
From where I was sitting.
Arsenal are really, really off the pace now.
Just
they are unbelievable.
Battered black and blue, yeah.
I remember the game they played a couple of weeks ago. The only player to be still playing for them since the team who last won the title was Kolo Touré.
Yeah.
The turnover playing staff there is unbelievable.
I mean, that team was very quickly dismantled and a lot of sort of younger players brought through, but yeah.
Well, just sticking with Barcelona just a tiny bit more, Real Madrid got thumped by them at the Bernabeu, and it was a joy to watch, really, wasn't it?
It's all apart. Game, yeah.
Barca could have had more. They legitimately could have had more.
Oh, yeah, could have had 10.
It was the same night Ricky Hatton lost, and I kind of thought, that kind of made up for that disappointment. Yeah. You know, it kind of cancelled that out. It was funny, after that match, Gus Hiddink said about Barca's performance, it was a respectable performance.
Whereas
Alex Ferguson said, Barcelona have fantastic players, and I watched them on Saturday night. I was absolutely drooling watching them.
Who said that?
It was a magnificent performance. Alex Ferguson.
I know you don't want me to talk about Tim Lovejoy too much, but Tim Lovejoy said that Real Madrid, the current Real Madrid side under Ramos, are the worst Real Madrid side of all time.
Yeah, but he's only dating back to 1992 when he thinks football started.
Do you know what he said? This is a direct quote. And, you know, and they're managed by one day Ramos. So, and we all know how bad he is.
Oh, my.
Do you think
goodness.
People try to start fights with Tim Lovejoy a lot, just in his life?
I'd like to think so.
Yeah. Do you know that Madrid side had gained 52 points from a possible 54 before that basketball?
Yeah, no, they're on a phenomenal run.
Yeah.
So, the worst side ever.
What a cretinous thing to say.
Tim Lovejoy tells the last English manager to win back-to-back European trophies. It was Ramos at Seville in Spain. Who was the last English manager to do it? He wouldn't know, Brian Clough. But you don't judge someone's managerial career in the 6 months they spent at a London club.
Definitely.
He's managed 12 clubs or something.
And it was Spurs.
Exactly, yeah.
You know. Speaking of which, I'm going to annoy you slightly here, Luke, but I think Harry Redknapp's done pretty well since he joined there.
Well, he's taken them out of a really, really dire situation.
And put them where they should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's also...
But, you know, they had a terrible, terrible start, and he was really handicapped by that. You've surely got to give him credit.
Yeah, a terrible start, and he came in and did well. Then he had an awful spell,
yeah,
and he's picked up again. But the bottom line is...
Which is typical of both of them, really. They really are sort of a match made in heaven.
I'm not going to take anything away from him, but all he's done is he's put them where they should be.
But the way he conducted himself when they were on that little bit of a slide... Just blaming the players, just really hanging them out to dry.
My wife could have scored that.
But you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I've ever said that Redknapp's a bad manager.
No, I'm not saying that you have.
One thing that he will be introducing next season is a drinking ban at Tottenham Hotspur because of Ledley King being a bit silly. Nicholas Bentner's also been a bit silly, hasn't he?
But at least Ledley King had his trousers on.
Well, apparently not. Apparently Ledley King was seen, which is allegedly, was led out of the police cell in the morning after with his trousers stinking of piss, and he was arrested with his jeans around his knees.
That's because John Terry pissed on him.
So he's not exactly that much more. Don't make it sound so much more dignified than Nicholas Bentner.
If you were that bouncer, wouldn't you just kick Ledley King in the knee? Like, given that bouncers are just basically allowed to do that sort of thing and just get away with it.
Yeah. I think that, you're throwing the baby out of the bathwater there. I'm sure there's plenty of French footballers in the league who enjoy a glass of wine with their dinner.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the English drinking culture to blame. And Redknapp's always been a massive proponent of team spirit and drinking. Oh, yeah. I know that for a fact. So I don't know what his motivation is for saying this, but, I mean, it's his responsibility to keep his players in line. And it's also nothing to do with him what his players do outside of... outside of football, anyway, they're employees of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. They're not employees of his.
It's only going to open a massive Pandora's box because you're going to get absolute just crowds and crowds of paparazzi following every Spurs player into every nightclub and out of every nightclub. It's ridiculous. And somebody was, I was listening to the radio today, and somebody said that professional contracts usually have a stipulation that you're not allowed in licensed premises.
Forty-eight hours before a match, or after.
So you shouldn't really be in one.
If he breaches contract, throw the book at him.
Well, do you think Rabinho's got one that says he's not allowed to be in Brazil 48 hours before a match?
My favourite bit about that whole story of King is like Ledley King's, to say the least, flimsy grasp of justice in the UK, the UK justice system. Apparently one of his quotes was, boss man, let me out of this cell. I don't deserve to be in here. I'm rich.
He allegedly said something like that to the bouncer, didn't he? He's like, oi, I'm a big rich man, yeah? You were your £10 job. Let me in.
£10 job?
Yeah, I love like a £10 an hour job.
That's right.
I love loose at paraphrasing least. In the press.
Does he think actually a king? Is that why?
Yeah, that's what his mum told him when
he's
the
king.
You're my little king. Adriano's the king. We all know that. The emperor.
Oh dear. Well, if we're gonna quote them, then Nicholas Bentner also said recently,
"Where are my trousers?"
He said, "I should wear trousers every week.
I should wear a belt."
I appear to have lost my trousers along with my first touch.
Yeah. Oh no, I came out without either.
He said, "I know I can be one of the best in the world. I have no doubt that this will happen. So that's why I take it easy."
Bentner's got 15 goals this season. Yeah, great attitude there, Nicholas.
Yeah, but two of those were against Portsmouth, I think. Yeah. So that don't count.
Oh, dear.
That's not a bad tally, though, for Bentner.
No, it isn't, actually. It's a good header against Chelsea.
Mm. Bentner's not an absolutely abysmal player. He's just one of those players that makes it easy to look bad, if you know what I mean.
He's very a dislikable chap.
Yeah, and he very, very much is
a
dislikable chap.
Well. Yes.
Two different ways of putting it, though.
The thing is, I mean... When we first started talking about Bentner, and he said, oh, yeah, I should be playing every game, I sort of gave him the benefit of the doubt in my head, thinking that maybe he's saying, with his ability, he feels he should be playing every game, and if he works hard, he'll be there.
Yeah.
I thought it might be a mistranslation. Now I've absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, if he's saying, I don't mind going out on the lash, because obviously I'm going to be really good. It's like, you've got to make that happen, you prat.
Exactly. Yeah, prat. Cutting.
Newcastle have won a game.
We're late.
Peter, I'm looking at you for this bit.
90 minutes of football. We managed it after a not so bright start.
Alan Shearer's shit-eating grin was one of the low lights of the week for me.
There was a good couple of goals scored. I thought Taylor's header was very strong.
That was a good header.
But it seemed to mirror the exact same way that I can't remember who scored against us. It was Liverpool. One player held Yeah. And Newcastle just copied that, and Stephen Taylor scored.
Well, they've learned from their mistakes.
They've learned from their mistakes.
That's all you can ask for, really.
And, I thought Viduka was fantastic. And
he got out of the match.
Yeah.
Basically, what we've learned from that game is, in a must-win game to avoid relegation, it always helps to be up against a team who are worse than you. And they lived up to its billing of being the desperation derby.
Yeah.
When the first old goal went in, own goal, comedy own goal as well. Rebounded the keeper onto the defender, like rolled in the net.
Who have Newcastle got to play?
Because I think Fulham at home, and then we've got Villa on the last day.
And it's away, isn't it?
Yeah, but Hull can't buy a win. So as long as Hull keep losing.
Well, Hull have got United at home on the last day. Now, United may have won the league by then and might rest players for the Champions League, but still, you know, you wouldn't fancy
Hull
them for that.
Hull have got 8 points since December, the first week of December.
It's been incredible, because I remember we were obviously singing their praises at the start of the season. It's been a spectacular collapse. I think when Phil Brown took his players out on the pitch at half time to dig them out, they do really seem to have
lost it all sort of togetherness.
It's just disjointed.
It's the first time they've been in the relegation zone this season.
Yeah, it is.
Two games left. What timing?
I was loving it. West Brom suddenly. There's a tiny. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Everyone's on 31. It's brilliant.
I know. Yeah. It's suddenly like, hang on, they're on the same points as a couple of other teams.
Thank Christ for all of our 1-1, 0-0 draws, because that sorted out our goal difference. Yeah. Chronic.
I'd love it if West Brom managed it. I mean, I don't think it will happen in a million.
They did it not long ago, didn't they? And the Germany is a team that sort of has a resurgence at the end of the season.
Allegedly took a massive bite against West Brom to send Southampton down. Cracking.
But I thought, did you see the highlights? West Brom v Wigan. Dean Kiely was magnificent.
Yeah, he was brilliant. That was his first league start of the season, wasn't it? Carter's been dropped, hasn't he?
Yeah, Dean Kiely was different class.
Had a shocker recently.
Obviously maybe. I didn't know that. But
And Kingston, who came on for Wigan in goal. He was brilliant. It was a superb display of goalkeeping in that game.
Kylie was at Pompey for a while. He's not a bad keeper. He's old now, but he's still got it.
Well, he was brilliant.
The sort of reliability that you need, though.
He was brilliant.
Got that old head on shoulders or something. Yeah, a bit of experience.
In the playoffs, one of the most ridiculous things I saw on last weekend's action was when BK got sent off.
That's the second time he's done that.
For Reading. Do you remember in the semi-final of African Cup of Nations, Cameroon...
He pushed a medic over.
Cameroon
was starting the final.
Were playing Ghana. Then a medic came on. The medics came on to sort out a player. And it was... why did he do that?
He went mental.
He did. As you say, he pushed a medic over.
He
got sent off fairly.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
And the referee pulled out the card and he just went
absolutely erupted.
He did a complete head case, ripped his shirt off and just started sort of stamping round in a circle.
Incredible Hulk. Yeah. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
Like, it was bizarre. Well,
Ross Wallace got sent off, didn't he, recently, for Preston? Was it for Preston? Because he got booked taking his shirt off and then got sent off.
Oh, yeah,
and
second yellow,
So stupid.
Yeah, it was strange. And I understand the point of that.
Why do players still... The point of the rule, apparently, is it's a FIFA directive and it's because bare flesh is seen as offensive in some countries.
Yeah, but they've all got vests underneath anyway.
But why do the players keep doing it? They know they're going to get booked.
It's weird. I mean, I think the only time you could not excuse it but sort of understand it is if it's last minute or something, it's an equaliser against your rivals and you just go completely mental.
Andres Iniesta?
Like India.
Yeah,
like India.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was such a... I mean, yeah, that's a silly thing to do. If you know you've already been booked, the manager must be going spare.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have that, really. But it's not the whole thing. I know the yellow card came in for them going into the crowd because it causes injury and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I didn't know why the shirt being removed rule was in place. That's brilliant.
How many countries is it offensive to? Like, what
14.
Some Middle Eastern countries, apparently. I'm not sure.
But, I mean, I'd argue that's just a financial concern for the Premier League, is it? Is that possible?
Well, it's from FIFA, though. So I think, even knowing that, I think it's a stupid rule.
Yeah.
Because footballers generally don't wear that much clothing anyway.
That's why I watch it.
Yeah. Stephen Ireland has come out recently and said he would like to achieve at City what Paul Scholes and Ryan Giggs have done at United. He said they have been fantastic servants to the club and won cupboards full of medals. Those two United players are legends, and that is a path I want to follow.
He doesn't want to win it with Ireland, though, does he?
That's right. No. And in fact, one of my aims, he says, is...
My aim is to play for England now.
He said, one of my aims is to play so well for so long here that I have a stand named after me.
Yeah, which you then decorate black with pink trim.
I want to emulate Ryan Giggs with my hair.
Well, what do you want me to say?
Stephen Ireland's Nan's memorial stand.
Oh dear!
Not that one, the other one.
you should be able to reach for the stars and not be criticised. That's what I think.
I think you three
are being very cruel to a very bald man.
Hey, just because you're growing your hair now, yeah. You can be
somebody can grow his hair. Somebody can.
Is that a thinly veiled side shot at Stephen Ireland?
And he knows it.
The Premier League is going to tighten up the fit and proper persons test for club owners. Perhaps they've been listening to the podcast.
Yeah. Am I right in saying that up until this point, they didn't check any criminal convictions for chairman until after they bought the club?
I think there's something.
And
like
now
that.
They're changing that. And now this is like some.
They're
sort
just not going to check.
This is some sort of like bureaucratic masterstroke.
Well, yeah. Well, this is in
well done, Brussels.
Yeah.
This is in response to a series of government questions over the top flight's regulatory powers.
Was the first one just what are you doing?
Well, yeah. I love this. A key change will see owners assessed before they take control of a club.
Oh, brilliant.
That's unbelievable.
Well, I see an end of the reign of financial fucking ludicrousness.
Well, yeah. 10 years ago, they had 322 rules in place. Now there's 777.
And I thought they were being tough on racism. Yeah. They're being really tough here. Didn't the guy, the sports minister, say that they need to, that the Premier League needs to reassess its relationship with money?
Well, it does, whether he said it or not.
No,
it does.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But, I'm pretty sure he said that.
He said there is also going to be a test that says if the UK government says that you're not fit to be a businessman in this country, then you're not allowed to own a football
club.
Well,
that's basic.
Why is that rule not already in?
Excuse me for not giving them credit for something that should have happened at the inception of the Premier League, or even the inception of the professional game.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
But that shouldn't need to be a rule.
Yeah. This is it, James.
Yeah. I mean, technically, if you're a chairman of a football club, you are an English business. You're a businessman in the country. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would you want to, yeah, it's fucking ridiculous.
It's just pointless.
And the guy actually...
From now on, no persons deceased can buy football clubs. Yeah.
No people with no hands can play the guitar.
No.
Not an exact comparison, no, but I see
no
what you mean.
Cats.
I mean, it was it's very complicated what they've been going through. There were 7 points I think the sports minister wanted raised, but I mean, without going into them in shockingly boring detail, I think David Conn and a couple of other sort of respected football journalists have said that, you know, this is... Yeah, this is nothing. They've not done anything they've been asked to do. They've made a few token gestures to appease the government, and that's pretty much all they're going to do and all they've continued to do. So, I mean, things like that, like Jimbo rightly says, there shouldn't even need to be a rule for it. That's the way it should be.
It's just basic common sense, isn't it?
It's like saying you can't be a footballer if you've got no ability.
Yeah.
Well, good, that's fine. You don't need a rule to say that. You know, that's the way it should be anyway. Mind you, supporters of Portsmouth may disagree with that.
One of your best.
Thanks.
He loves the word emails.
Hello, Ramblers. Just wanted to let you know that Robbie Fowler is still a fat bastard up in Queensland. Since his signing, all plastic Scousers are now supporting North Queensland Fury. Don't know if this is actually helpful or useful, but I remember you mentioning him last time, so I felt that I had to inform you of his heft. That's from Mick in Australia.
Thank you, Mick.
Nice. Great use of the word heft.
I actually like Robbie Fowler, so...
Yeah, we like him. Enough. Like him. Next one. Hi, Ramblers. I'd like your opinion on something that my brother and I have been in disagreement about all season. Long throw-ins in the Roy Delap style. My brother thinks it's basically cheating and not in the spirit of the game. I think it's a skill like any other, and if he spent time developing it, then fair play. Thoughts?
Well, if it's going to be something that's not in the spirit of the game, I think you can start in a better place than long throw-ins.
It's essentially the same as... kicking it high up in the air.
Yeah.
What he means is it's not in the spirit of the game. What he means by that is he personally doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not cheating on any level.
No.
I think you're correct, mate. Yeah, your brother is wrong.
So James, not Jim, is correct there. Next one. Hello all. I spent a long weekend recently on a stag where nearly everyone else was a West Ham fan. There was one Gooner, which was me, one Liverpool fan, an Orient fan and a Spurs fan. On the last night we did pub golf and everyone had to bring a silly item of clothing for the stag to wear. Tony, the Spurs fan, made the stag wear his Spurs shirt, stag being a rampant
harsh
whammer, as harsh he's put him.
Very harsh.
So Tony, the Spurs fan, thought he'd pulled off a hilarious jape. Sadly, it backfired when the other whammers, that's West Ham fans, snapped over the issue and started ripping the shirt off the stag halfway through the night. One actually got the cock on the badge between his teeth and bit it off. They then dropped the bits on the floor and set them on fire. There was a little tear in Tony's eye. Everyone else was dead chuffed. We had nothing else in common, but we all hated Spurs. Great
and
stuff.
Then they had sex.
No, that didn't happen, Pete.
That's from Jim Goodwin. So,
and that's from Jim Goodwin. That's a fantastic email.
That's a wonderful story.
Well done.
Luke appreciates it.
No, it's funny. I enjoyed that.
All right, Ramble Force. Don't know if any of you listen to the Tim
Ramble Force. Ho!
Squadron leader of the Ramble Force here. I don't know if anybody listened. Any of you listened to the Tim Lovejoy 606 program after the Chelsea Barton game? Well, we have mentioned it on this particular podcast today.
Well, he wasn't to know, was he, Marcus?
No, he wasn't to know. But we will go through what the rest of the email says. It was a very biased piece of radio, but the stuff he was coming out was ridiculous. Here's a few examples. Barcelona only have one way of playing. It's a pretty good way of playing, Tim, don't you say?
It isn't bad, is it?
What, putting the ball in the net loads and loads and loads of time. Admittedly not against Chelsea, but you know what I mean.
Lovejoy said, Messi isn't very good. He can score against rubbish teams in Spain, but not against English teams who play in the best league in the world.
Oh, God.
Didn't Keith say something?
It's like Tim Lovejoy is shortening my life with his very existence.
It's like
just
a walking,
it's
like a walking bleach highlighted cancer on the game of football in general.
Didn't Richard Keith say something? They were talking about Messi, and he went, "Well, he plays in a bit of an."
He's like a walking brown haired cancer on the game of football.
What did he say?
Richard Keith. He said that. Is there an argument to be made that
the Messi
Spain is a poor league outside of Barcelona and Real Madrid, didn't he, or something like that?
No.
Has anyone seen the fact that in their beloved Premier League, the bottom eight teams have amassed about three wins between them in about 6 months? A team can feasibly stay up on 34 points in a 38-game season. Yeah. That's less than a point a game. It's not the best league in the world by any stretch of the imagination.
Absolutely.
So take your head out of your arse, right, and start watching football outside the London area.
It's on Sky.
Exactly, yeah. All the time.
And Channel 5.
Yeah.
when Izzy, who's on the show with Tim...
She's actually pretty decent.
Right. She pointed out to him that Barca had enjoyed something like 70% of the possession over the two legs and had the same amount of shots as Chelsea over the two legs. He replied with, so?
Sad, bitter man.
He was treating that woman like a fucking ragdoll all through that fucking show.
What Oxfordian wit. You know, what manner and wit.
The only person they managed to get on that criticised Tim Lovejoy directly about being biased and just plainly stupid was a really nervous Welshman.
Out of breath Welshman. Colin, wasn't it?
The Welshman.
Don't hang up on me.
And he was so angry, he couldn't really get everything out. He was going, you're just so biased.
You're a disgrace, Tim.
You're a disgraceful broadcaster. I don't understand why you're on here.
Yeah. He kept saying, you're a disgrace, Lovejoy. You're a disgrace, Lovejoy. And whilst we all agreed with the sentiment, it wasn't the most articulate way of putting his voice across.
But anyway, just to round off with that email, that was from Chris, so thank you very much for that.
I followed him on Twitter.
We followed him home.
Just so I can see if he says anything funny so I can talk about it here. And he was just saying stuff that was annoying me so much. I actually sent him a little tweet saying,
shit,
you haven't got a clue what you're talking about. He was saying that Michael said that Michael Ballack is one of the most decorated players in Europe, which isn't true at all.
No.
He's lost so many finals. He's
hardly
one of them.
He's actually known as the bridesmaid, isn't he?
The bridesmaid.
Which is a massively undignified name to be known as.
Ugly bridesmaid.
Mm.
You want to cop off on him if you're
Munting.
The best man?
Yeah, you would.
You would.
Oh, yeah. It's James or Jim time.
Hey! You're right. I've got some hilarious goings on from the world of football for you.
All right, James and Jim, how you doing?
I'm good.
Oh, I like you.
Yeah, you're brilliant in that.
Do you want to hear about football ace Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Football ace Cristiano Ronaldo is buying a red double-decker bus to impress his nieces and nephews.
Oh, that's
all right.
Nice.
The Manchester United winger marvels at the London buses when he's with his team in the capital, and driving a slow bus might be just the job for him, the Daily Star reports. It must just be fucking mental over there.
Yeah, I know.
Ronaldo wants to convert a bus into a play palace for his nieces and nephews when they visit. He plans to drive them around the countryside near his home. This sounds like a kind of just gone mental era Oasis video.
I'll have you, Butler.
Yeah. Just what? The 120 grand a week player will keep it in the back garden of his £4 million mansion. Ronaldo revealed his plans to a Portuguese newspaper, saying, "For me, the sight of red London buses is what my first thoughts of England were, and I can afford to replicate every thought I have ever had." part of that is me paraphrasing. Yeah. My nieces and nephews would love to play on one, so I'm going to buy one for them. Pals say Ronaldo is looking to splash out around 10 grand and perhaps more to kit out. His neighbours in Alderley Edge, Cheshire, joked it would be just like 70s TV comedy on the buses.
No, they didn't.
Reg
that didn't happen.
They didn't. Never, ever happened. We've heard Cristiano wants to buy a bus, which will be a first for this area, because we're all so rich. We've been joking that he'll be able to give us a lift to the shops, but I doubt he'll drive it much. Said one local, who didn't.
That story says to me, what can we think of to fill newspaper column space that he's not going to be offended enough to complain about?
And obviously, yeah, his neighbours are living in a very, very rich area because they're his neighbours, so they've put, just to add a bit of character and make it believable, we've heard Cristiano wants to buy a bus, which will be a first for this area.
Yeah. I guess it is one of those rumours that they put in. That he's never going to say
that's
no.
Refute. He's never
it's
going
like Neil Sean in the celebrity sort of showbiz
in
pages.
The Metro, yeah,
where he
yeah.
sort of says, "I've been talking to Sandra Bullock," and he's always talking about Sandra Bullock. He goes, "and she wants to move to London because she really likes London." She's never going to say, "No, I hate London. No, I hate all of you who live there."
Yeah. There was something a little while ago saying about how Russell Brand really, really likes coffee, so he has a coffee machine, and when he goes to different countries, he needs a different plug extension to use it. It's like, well, he will do, yes.
Oh, that's
just
great news.
Not news.
I don't know about you lot, but I've always found like plug sockets abroad exactly the same as England. Mm. So what's Russell's problem?
America.
Exactly. Yeah. What do you got to say about it, Marcus?
Shocking.
It is all just a big shame. Yeah. Moving on, right? Chelsea fans have hatched a plot to get their own back on bungling referee Tom Henning of Rabo by stopping Norway winning the Eurovision Song Contest. Ooh! The referee turned down 4 penalty appeals as Chelsea crashed out of the hands of Barcelona.
It was 17 penalties.
17, of course, sorry, yes.
It was 100!
This is absurd. But with Chelsea's hopes of reaching the final for a second consecutive year in tatters, fans are hoping to find consolation by preventing of Rabo's home country from taking glory in this year's Eurovision. An internet campaign, the Brainchild. Brainchild is a very, very generous wording here. Of a group of Chelsea fans, possibly led by Tim Lovejoy, has been launched to drum up enough support across Europe to ensure Norway are deprived of victory. But one Blues fan said in the Daily Star, "They robbed Chelsea of the chance of playing the Champions League semi-final, so let's rob them of the Eurovision trophy." The possibly slash definitely made up man thinks that the entire nation of Norway were behind the referee's decision, so they must all suffer. Because sending him death threats isn't enough, is it? It's a fucking disgrace!
Guaranteed, he doesn't even know where Norway is.
He's not a real person.
He'd never heard of Norway.
He's not a real person.
No, that's never happened.
God.
That guy probably hates Eurovision like everyone else anyway.
If you stand Norway up on its most southern point and let its most northern point fall southwards, what country would it land in?
France.
Portugal.
Morocco.
Really?
Oh, mm-hmm. That's great stuff.
That's a great little
that's a long
pointless
old
fact.
You've rescued that.
So vote for them.
Yeah. For no other reason to annoy Chelsea fans.
Yeah, absolutely. If you are listening and you are one of the judges.
By the way,
could
I apologise on behalf of the show for not reading out any of the Chelsea fans' emails? Because they might feel a bit hard done by.
Yes. I've got one more. This is from a website called Sports Rubbish, which is quite good. Ronaldo's Corinthians team won this year's Paulista Championship in Brazil, beating Santos. During the trophy presentation, a group of players and team executives, including Captain William, were lifted into the air as the fans cheered on. The platform was spouting fireworks and paper streamers were then fired off towards everyone who was holding the trophy. Those of you who are aware that paper is flammable can guess what happened next.
I saw that,
a giant ball of flame engulfed William, but somehow everyone managed to pull all of the streamers off of him before he was burned alive.
That's so- a bit far.
Listen to this.
That's going a bit far.
Right, listen to this, right? There's no further explanation for this from this site. To make matters worse, he was then denied a bank loan.
Oh, what a day I'm having. Yeah, well, you just won the Paulista Championship. Yeah, I know, but I was set on fire. I didn't get a bank loan.
Yeah, I didn't get a bank loan.
By the way, can I just say, a giant ball of flame is a bit generous.
Yeah, I've seen the video in it. He does appear to be legitimately on fire, but it's only for about 3 seconds.
I would not give a man who was flammable
which is now in the fit and proper person's test. I was watching it and I thought to myself, maggity, aren't the crystal domes a bit flashy these days?
it did look like that.
Yeah.
Oh, but well done to Ronaldo's Corinthians, though.
Yeah.
He's right back among the goals, isn't he?
Mm. Adriano signed for Flamengo as well, isn't he?
He has indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I see them saying that they were saying that the chairman of Flamengo says, "Oh, we're just waiting for him to sign. You know, sign the details and the contract's ready. And when he finally signs, we're going to throw a big party for him." And I was thinking, that's probably not what he needs.
Yeah.
If anything, a big party in Brazil is not what he needs.
Mm. Not no. Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time, and this week we're going to be putting a football team in, but a football team with a difference.
That's good, because they can play the New York Cosmos and Atletico Bilbao.
Absolutely.
The most bizarre tournament that's ever taken place.
That's right. The team is FC St. Pauli.
Hey.
Now, most of you probably won't know who they are. Well, at the end of this, you will do.
Is it Pauli or Pauli?
Pauli.
Okay.
They are a German sports-based club in the St. Pauli quarter of Hamburg. And the football department is the big one.
They've got a football department?
Well, they have a football club.
It's like
a football club.
Massive German version of JJB.
They have a football club, obviously. But they also have rugby, American football, baseball, bowling, boxing, chess, cycling, handball...
Chess!
...skittles, softball and table tennis teams.
Cool. Is chess really a sport?
It is in Germany.
Oh,
cool.
Don't have a go at chess.
I'm not having a go at chess. I'm just questioning the validity of the categorisation.
Don't have a go at chess.
I'm not having a go at chess. Stop having a go at me for having a go at chess, but I'm not having a go at chess.
He'll be slagging backgammon in a minute.
Because he doesn't understand it.
I'm not claiming to understand it.
Oh, past the pigs. Is that not a spot?
Yeah. Oh, I could do draft.
Yeah.
Damn. Anyway, back to Football Club St. Pauli. The club began its existence in 1899 when a loose, informal group of football enthusiasts got together and started kicking a ball around. But officially, they came to place in 1910. Their nickname is the Pirates of the League. You'll find out why in a very short time.
Good nickname, the Pirates. Mm.
That's right. This is quite... The team played... in the kind of lower to mid leagues in Germany. But in 1934, they made their first appearance in the top flight in one of the 16 Premier level divisions, which were created in the reorganisation of German football that took place under the Third Reich. Oh. So 16 Premier divisions.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, not bad, those leagues.
Yeah. Imagine how Richard Keys would love that, wouldn't he?
That's right.
He's football every night.
But
Steve Ryder wouldn't like it. Oh, football again.
God. Just let me play Nazi golf.
Where's the golf?
But in 1963, that's when the Bundesliga came along, and teams like Hamburg, SV, Werder Bremen, and all the rest were in there. But St. Pauli were in the second tier of German football. And in the 60s and the 70s, St. Pauli were in the second and third tiers of German football. But it was in the mid-80s was when St. Pauli really became what they're all about today. And they were transformed from a regular footballing club to a cult club. And that's when it all began. Now, the club turned its location of its ground, and the ground is in the dock area of Hamburg, which is obviously famous for its nightlife and red light district.
And
all the rest of it. But they turned that round to its advantage, and an alternative fan scene emerged. And a lot of the fans leaning towards the left with politics, they created an event in a party atmosphere at the club's matches. And the supporters adopted the skull and crossbones.
That's brilliant.
As their unofficial emblem, hence the Pirates of the League. But importantly, and this is the real big thing about them, is St. Pauli became the first team in Germany to officially ban right-wing nationalist activities and displays in its stadium, which in an era when fascism was all the thing with football hooliganism and threatened the game across Europe. And in 1981, St. Pauli were averaging crowds of 1,600 spectators. By the late 90s, they frequently were getting 20,000 into their stadium, which was obviously a sellout. In the 90s, the media really picked up on St. Pauli and their cult image, and it focused very much on the punk part of their fan base. And that's when the nickname Pirates of the League really began to kind of come to the forefront. But in the late 80s, 88 to 91, they were in the Bundesliga. But they weren't there for very long. And as I say, they tend to operate in Germany's kind of second tier. Mm. Their most recent appearance in the Bundesliga was 2001-2002. But unfortunately, finished last. Oh. But they did beat Bayern Munich.
So they're partying.
They did beat Bayern Munich 2-1. And Bayern Munich were the World Club Championship winners then. So St. Pauli had T-shirts printed of World Club Championship beaters. They're printed out and sold quite a few.
Haven't
of
they
them.
Got like an openly gay chairman or something?
Yeah. They have to. Well, we'll come on to him in a minute.
They've also got like a lot of like celebrity sort of... kind of goth musician followers. They're like a goth football team. It's really odd.
Yeah, it's kind of a sort of a punk goth thing there.
Sounds amazing.
Alternative scene football team.
That's right, yeah. Well, St. Pauli enjoy a very certain fame for their left-wing characteristics of its supporters, and most of the team's fans regard themselves as anti-fascist, anti-racist, anti-sexist, and anti-homophobic. And this is... brought them into conflict with a lot of the neo-Nazis and hooligans at away games. But as I say, the football club has taken a big stance against racism, fascism, sexism, homophobia, and that's really what they're all about. They have a huge following as well. The club prides itself on having the largest number of female fans in all of German football. And in 2002, advertisements for the men's magazine Maxim were removed from the team stadium in response to fan protests over the sexist depictions of women in the ads.
It's not the antithesis of everything football's about in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And St. Pauli can boast more season ticket holders than many Bundesliga teams. And one study recently suggested that there's roughly 11 million fans throughout Germany that are St. Pauli fans.
Yeah, I think the from what I've heard, the actual attendances at German football in the leagues in Germany are actually really good as well. So it's even more of an achievement, really.
Definitely.
Mm, absolutely.
It sounds like it's more of a lifestyle choice.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's making a statement about your personal
views.
Yeah,
definitely.
Rather than just supporting a team, do you know what I mean?
Well, I think so, yeah.
Which is amazing.
There's 200 registered fan clubs, many of them outside of Germany for them.
It's so weird for a club to have so much of an overtly political wing anywhere, whichever side, right or left.
That's right.
Fascists are always a little, you know, they're always just little toe rags and stuff. And you've got like, and you've got Lazio and teams like that.
It is more prevalent in Italy, I think, but outside of Italy, definitely not. Yeah, I think you're right.
That's it. They also, St. Pauli also have close links with many other foreign clubs, particularly with Glasgow Celtic. St. Pauli fans attend Celtic games on the continent when they play away in Europe. And their flags, St. Pauli flags and scarves, can be frequently seen on display at Celtic Park. And the official Celtic stores even sell St. Pauli merchandise. I think that the link is perhaps because the main rivals of both sides, obviously Rangers for Celtic and Hamburg SV for St. Pauli, they have links as well. So perhaps it's a reaction to that.
Yeah.
In Israel, St. Pauli is identified with Hapoel Tel Aviv FC. And Tel Aviv FC also see themselves as anti-racist and anti-fascist. And in some of their home games, you can see St. Pauli flags waved in the stadium as well.
Starting a whole movement. I'll be happy for them to join with Porto. That'd be amazing. Never going to happen. Tell you what, you go spend an afternoon at Fratton Park, you know it will never happen. If you get what I mean.
Well, one thing that's going to please you, Luke, is they open their home matches, every home matches, with AC/DC's Hell's Bells.
Oh, brilliant.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely superb.
Yeah, and they also... And looking at St Pauli as a, the sports club as a wider thing, the women's rugby team have won 6 national titles. So,
well done to them as well. Mm.
They've got it all covered. But as you mentioned before, the club's president, Corny Lippmann, is a character, not only by name but by nature as well. He set up the Schmidt Theatre in Hamburg, and he's the managing director of 2 theatres, and in 1999 was named Hamburg Entrepreneur of the Year. He is openly gay and works in the nude.
Fit and proper persons test.
Yes.
Is that a generic fit and proper persons test joke there? Works in the nude, brilliant.
Does he attend the games in the nude? That would be even better. I'd like to finish by just... I think this kind of sums them up quite nicely. The club has been active with charity work, and in 2005, the fans of the club initiated the Viva Con Agua de Skank Pauli campaign, which collects money for water dispensers for schools in Cuba.
Oh, brilliant. Oh.
Brilliant.
Superb stuff.
So, I think we're having them.
We
this
are.
This is St Pauli. Come on,
come
in.
On in.
Come on in. There it is. There it is. Corey Lippmann is really swinging to this one.
Yeah. He's ringing hell's bell.
Swinging everywhere.
He's ringing his hell's bell.
Hey.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of this edition of the Football Ramble. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you would like to get in contact with us, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. We have a myspace.com/footballramble. We have a group on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Last FM.
I call it Twatter.
You could do.
Just a little example of the hilarity that spews forth from my mouth at all times.
Yeah.
Just an example of one of the laughs you have.
Yeah. That's right. We
do enjoy laughs.
Hey, friends. Mate, if you're like cracking funnies like that, you should get on Twitter, yeah, and just tell everyone about it every time you do it, yeah? You should do that.
Like you do, Pete, yeah?
Yeah.
Can you tell them for me?
Highlights of Pete's Twitter involve
what?
How many Michael Bublé stickers can I stick to my torso? Don't deny it, that was one of
I
yours.
I can't remember that one.
Yeah.
We also have a website, which is thefootballramble.com. Pete has another website, which is drawyourdad.com. So
it is marvellous.
Actually, yeah, I'll draw mine and I'll put him up. He looks like Marvin Monroe from The Simpsons.
Mm.
Not in real life, just in that picture.
Yeah.
I need to draw my dad and give it to you personally so you can upload it, because I don't have a scanner, but yeah.
What are you doing,
I will
Pete?
Get it to you.
Do it in paint.
Feel
I don't
free.
Mind paint.
Yeah, I can't find paint on my computer. I'm sure it's there. Marcus, you were saying something.
I just want you to say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Peter.
Goodbye.
And goodbye, Luke.
Hell's bells.
We're all off to do the fit and proper persons test in the nude. Goodbye.
First time.
Speelt de bal. Heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp. Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp. Die neemt de bal feilloos aan. En hij schiet de bal erin. We spelen nog officieel 20 seconden.